keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You have just tuned into Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. For the next hour, your host, Dr. Tom Rogers, and Jim Velas will expose the business diseases that bleed your profits and rupture the quality of your life. Now welcome your host.
Rogers once again, and this is Jim Velas, and here we are streaming worldwide to make your business healthy and profitable.
The name of our show is Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. Now Jim and I head up the Rogers Group, where our focus is on building healthy organizations by eliminating whatever diseases exist in your company, diseases being anything that detracts from profits. Last week, we had on the show Dr. Richard Silver, or Richie as we called him. The name of the show was entitled How to Avoid Startup Company Malaise. And Richard is an entrepreneur, and he is an expert in the field of advanced medical technology, and he talked about the problems that startup companies and would-be startups have, specifically with regard to getting capital. He gave you a lot of ins and outs in terms of how to deal with venture capitalists and angel investors and what the difference are, and when it would be advisable to go to them, when it would be advisable to go to the bank, and the kind of outside help that companies, well, actually like our company, the Rogers Group, can give you. So it was a very, very interesting and dynamic discussion, and he also talked about the kind of problems startup companies have just in terms of building an organization, getting good people, keeping good people, being lean and mean, and having a good solid plan, especially focusing on the business plan, because that's critical to having a profitable organization. It's critical to securing the financing, like when you go to your bank or go to an angel investor or a venture capitalist. In any event, that's last week, and we are ready to move on to newer things. So, Jim, what is new, as a matter of fact, with the Rogers Group?
Well, Tom, we had a very interesting email last week, and I thought I might address it because it might be confusing some of our listeners. But the question went along the lines of, when we go in to a company, do we tend to take the side of management or do we tend to take the side of the employees? And I thought that was an interesting question, but the truth is, our alliance is towards building a healthy organization. And sometimes what we have there is some issues with the employees who are not the five-star employees that we're looking at, in which case we address them and we address how managers go about hiring those people. In other cases, what we do find is that we have some managers that are not five-star managers, and again, we do the same thing. We go into them, we try to find out why they're not five-star employees, or managers, and then we go through a development process because, you know, our purpose is not to go in there and become a headhunter and start shooting people. Our job is to go in there and to build a very healthy organization. And I would guess, we don't have actual statistics on this, but in 95% of the cases, our leadership or our employee development programs tend to create a healthy organization without sacrificing either management or labor. And to that end, it builds right into our program today because we have Charles Krugel coming in, who's an attorney in this sort of thing. And we're going to talk about what management and the employees can learn about how to keep their legality issues on a healthy plane. And so with that, let's bring in Chuck. Chuck, welcome back. This is, I think, your second or third appearance through popular demand on the program. So before we get started, can you reacquaint the audience with a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Tom and Jim. Thanks for having me on again. It's my third time, by the way. So I'm a labor and employment attorney in Chicago, management side, do HR consulting also, which is the HR consulting is on the preventive or proactive end. So like you indicated in your in the summary of what the Rogers Group does along those lines, you know, helping to eliminate or minimize the impact of labor and employment-related issues in the workplace, whether it be union or non-union related issues, trying to minimize the costs and expenses related to HR and employment. So
very good.
Thanks.
So the let's get Chuck, first of all, it's a pleasure to have you on again.
Thanks.
You've been an excellent guest. And And so we're happy to have you back, that's for sure. And never a shortage of things to talk about with you. So what let's talk about employment at will.
Yeah.
What exactly is this concept?
Well, the employment at will doctrine is basically that an employer can fire an employee, basically handle the employment relationship at will, meaning that the employee works at the will of the employer. They could discharge for any reason, any time, with or without cause or notice. Likewise, the employee can quit employment with the employer any time for any reason, with or without notice. And that's the law in a lot of states in the U.S.
Is there some states where employees would have to, I see what you're saying, they can just quit and walk out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right, as opposed to they don't have to give 2 weeks' notice.
No, there's no, unless there's a contract or some sort of provision within a contract or agreement, generally that's the law. Some states are right-to-work states with unions where an employee does not have to join a union, and they have the right to work in that state regardless whether or not there's a union contract.
Right, because right-to-work has been such a controversial topic in this country. And really, is there, now you were just saying that the employee has a right to work in an organization. He doesn't, the employee is, that means the employee doesn't have to join a union, even if the union's there, or can you just be a little more fine-tuned that a little bit?
Well, yeah.
All that means a right to work?
Well, in the right to work state, you basically hit it on the head there. They don't have to join the union. They could basically work alongside their union coworkers without having to pay into the union. Whereas maybe in an employment at will state where if there is a union, or in many, I think the way it works out with many employment at will states where there is a union, the employee would have to still pay a fair share, pay part of the dues, even if they refuse to join for religious reasons. Generally, that's the reason given for not joining a union.
Right, right. So a company could have a union in a right to work state, and they just not join it. You're not subject to anything that goes on in the union.
Yeah.
You know, Chuck, when we get into an organization and we start talking to management, even in a right to at will state,
employment at will.
Yeah. Management thinks of this thing as it's really fiction. I mean, they always say, well, we can't really hire or fire at will. If I just fire somebody because I don't want them around, I tend to get sued.
Yeah.
So what does this employment at will really mean in the practical world?
Yeah, in the practical world, it is somewhat of a fiction. And you're right, this comes up at every seminar I give also. The idea basically that unemployment compensation, workers' compensation, or workmen's compensation, depending on what you call it, and then the EEO laws, harassment, discrimination, disability, those types of laws, basically diminish the impact of employment at will, because you're then faced with, as a business, you're faced with the idea of all the documentation or all the bureaucracy that entails hiring and disciplining and then possibly laying off or firing an employee. So you do have to protect yourself as an employer when you discharge. So the idea of just discharging with or without notice or cause is somewhat of a fiction when you start looking at the costs entailed during the employment life cycle. Largely, and at first that relates basically to either workers' compensation or unemployment comp, and then you're looking at the other legal type of expenses, EEO laws.
So why would states even pass employment at will?
Well, I think the idea is basically that the businesses do have that freedom, and the employees do have the freedom, too. You know, the question's been asked of me also, don't the employees then bear the risk or more of the risk in the workplace in an employment will state? And, you know, my answer is no. It's always no, because an employer goes into business, there's risk in that, too. An employer goes into business, there's risk of profit or loss. Well, profit's not the risk, but the risk of loss. And then they take a risk when they hire an employee. So there is risk in that. There's no guarantee of success for a business. And the employment at will concept frees up business basically to hire, fire, handle their workplace without government interference. So in the respect, you do have the ability to discharge at will or to lay off fire will, whatever, but you may have to, you may incur cost relative to unemployment compensation, workers' compensation, or any of the other legally associated or related costs. It's a tough situation for both employers and employees, but if you do it right, if you're preventive and proactive in terms of your human resources and dealing with your employees or human capital, you can protect yourself, and you can also protect your employees.
So what do you mean, Chuck, by being preventive? Can you put a little meat on that?
Yeah, the whole concept is basically almost like a pay me now or pay me later concept relative to legal expenses and your HR-related costs. Basically, you want to have policies and practices in the workplace that ensure the value of your human capital. In the same way you take out insurance on equipment, automobiles, production equipment, whatever, you, in a sense, want to invest money also into your employees so that you're maximizing value and productivity. And that includes making the workplace free from harassment, discrimination, free from third-party influence on your workforce, and a safe work environment for your employees to work in also.
Well,
and that, and by doing that, you're creating a environment that prevents or helps minimize human resources-related issues, or when they arise, is proactive enough that you can resolve it at the quote-unquote street level, at the the level of the workplace as opposed to the third-party level.
Well, as a business owner, can I get around that by just hiring independent contractors and outsourcing everything?
To an extent, but there's also laws regarding who you designate as independent contractors, whether they're not, they're actually employees. So you may, you know, for the tax purposes under the Internal Revenue Code or for under state tax laws, you may not be able to do that. It's going to depend on what functions you're looking at outsourcing and what you're looking at keeping in-house. You just can't, but you can't arbitrarily designate one way or the other. Same thing with overtime exemption under the Fair Labor Standards Act. That's not an arbitrary designation who's exempt or non-exempt under the FLSA.
Well, there's a lot of companies who outsource parts of their business, whether it be the manufacturing part or in some cases the HR functions, or in your case maybe some of the legal functions. So in the strictest sense, what's the definition of an outsourced employee versus an in-house employee?
Well, the outsourced employee, they may, you may not have total control over them, and you may be relieved from some of the liability in the workplace. But then again, if an out, if you have an outsourced employee in your, in the workplace, you still may be liable for issues that arise anyway, because as the employer or the business owner, you're still responsible for creating a safe work environment.
Yeah, we actually have to take a break now. Thanks, Chuck. This is Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Bellis and our special guest, Chuck Krugel. We'll be back in just a moment.
Business information you need. From the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
All rise. This honorable court is now in session.
Please be seated. The defendant shall remain standing. The defendant is before this court today for sentencing, having been previously found guilty of a gun crime by a jury of his peers. Given the severity of this crime, it is the order of this court that the defendant be sentenced to a term of 5 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 5 years of walking home alone from school.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velez.
Hello, this is Dr. Tom Rogers once again with my co-host Jim Velez and our very special guest, attorney and labor law expert Chuck Krugel. And Chuck has been talking to us about things like right to work, in employment at will, and he's giving us some of the nuances of employment at will, as there appear to be some internally contradictory things here, but Chuck is clearing it all up for us. And the question now that Chuck was answering that we want to get back to is simply in situations where if you're hiring an outside contractor, what kind of liabilities does the company have in this kind of circumstance? Chuck?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And as I was saying, the business owner, the employer, regardless of whether or not they have outsourced or third-party contractor employees in the workplace, they're still liable for creating a safe workplace environment free from harassment, discrimination, physical or emotional, psychological harm, that type of stuff. So they can be liable for the conduct of third-party employees, regardless of who is paying them or who they were provided by. The same thing goes, can also extend to customers in the workplace. I mean, if you have customers coming into your workplace and they're harassing your employees, as a business owner, you can be held liable for your customer's conduct if you don't take reasonable measures to basically diminish or prevent or negate that conduct from arising again.
Well, relative to the independent contractors, can I pay them whatever I want or require them to be citizens or have proper documentation?
No, I mean, basically, you can pay them, they still have to make minimum wage, generally, and all you can't require U.S. citizenship as long as they have the proper documentation. So as long as they're eligible to work in the U.S., they basically work under the same laws as everyone else, unless there's some sort of agreement with a country. You know, you get into some nuances, but that generally wouldn't apply to most workplace situations.
What about the employee as an illegal immigrant?
Well, you are required to verify employment eligibility in the U.S., you know, the I-9 forms, and, you know, they generally stipulate, you know, you have that one I-9 form with the different columns that require what you have to verify, but as an employer, you don't necessarily have to verify the actual validity of the document. I mean, as long as the person provides the documents themselves that that the document stipulated in that form, the I-9 form, under law, then you're fine. You don't have to actually go out there, you know, to go verify fingerprints or anything like that.
Right. So there could be a false document, but you don't have to verify it.
Yeah, I mean, if it patently looks false, you don't accept it, but as long as it looks like a real, like driver's license or passport or birth certificate, whatever, you're not required to, chemically analyze it or anything like that.
Well, Chuck, you know, when we were preparing for the show, you gave us some statistics, and maybe we ought to bring this point home a little bit better.
Yeah.
What happens if my organization, whether it be the management or the employees, do not truly understand how the employment system works in this country?
Yeah.
And what kind of liabilities does a company and or employee have if they don't go through the proper training modes?
Yeah. As I indicated to you earlier, I did some research on this not too long ago. It's the statistics, astounded me. This is on the macro level, the big picture level. In 2004, Chubb Insurance Company did a survey of privately held companies in the U.S., and they found that 1 in 4 privately held companies had been sued by an employee or former employee, but it's estimated that 75% of those suits are groundless. Now, when you look at the actual cost of the suits, according to Jury Verdict Research, which is a private company, they were looking at the cost of employment-related lawsuits. Now, if you train an organization, a company, they were estimating that to train a 200-employee organization, it would cost approximately $25 to train each employee or $5,000 for the program. So if a company were to do that and they were hit with a lawsuit, like I just said, 1 in 4 privately held companies can expect to be hit with an employment-related suit, it would cost approximately $155,000 to litigate the case. The cost to settle the case would be about $85,000. That's if you train. This is in comparison to litigate or settle a case when no training occurs. And this is really astounding. If to litigate a case when no training occurs in the workplace, jury verdict research found that it's $960,750 to litigate the case.
Wait, what was that number again, Chuck?
$960,000, or almost $1 million, really, to litigate a case. $304,000 to settle the case when no training occurs in the workplace. And this was based on a 200-employee workforce at $25 each to train those 200 employees, or $5,000 for preventive human resources training.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is quite a statistic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really astounding. The idea, basically, that you have a 25% chance of getting hit with a suit, and then what it's going to cost to resolve that suit. It's really, it is shocking.
And then if somebody were to go in there and train these employees, the 200 employees, this you're talking about training employees and management, correct?
You train the whole organization.
And what's the advantage now? I mean, everybody can understand why you want to train the management, but why would you want to go about training the employees?
Well, again, the idea of human capital is an investment in your employees to make them more sophisticated relative to these issues. And generally speaking also, management is generally they're second to hear about these issues. As a business owner, you want to keep your, quote-unquote, nose, ear to the ground so you know what's happening, and you're going to know that from your rank-and-file workforce. And you want to be able to also resolve the issues as soon as they arise, not after the employee goes to a third party, some outside agency or an attorney. You want to be able to resolve it yourself. It's your business. And you also want your employees to feel that they have an investment in the workplace too, that they should be looking out for one another and looking out for these issues themselves, so that if something catches their eye, they can let their manager or the owners of the business know what's happening in the workplace.
That's interesting. A lot of time, Chuck, people come up to us and say, look, I knew this was going on, but I didn't think it was my place to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And our reply to that is generally, look, a company makes so much money, and what the company does with that money is a lot of times dictated by a lot of things. I mean, you have to pay for your raw materials,
yeah.
You have to pay for your marketing, you have to pay for your employees. And when you go through a whole bunch of what you have to pay for, there's money left over. And that money left over either allows the business to continue to function, or in the case of if it robs the business of money that it needed to support itself, the business goes under.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were just going to use your numbers and just take some arbitrary numbers here, but you mentioned that in a company with 200 employees, and the chances are 1 in 4 that they're going to have a suit against them.
Yeah.
And if they do it wrong, the liability is $1 million.
Could be if it reaches verdict, yeah.
Right. But if you just said those 200 employees make on an average of $25,000 each, which is probably, I don't know where it is in your company, but that comes out to $500,000 payroll.
Yeah.
And so the chances are 1 in 4, if you don't do everything right, you could get hit with $1 million liability, which is, in fact, 4 years of your complete payroll.
Yeah.
So if I were to come back and say from a business standpoint, and I didn't want to roll the dice on this, how much could I expect to pay for some training from a group like either yourself or us or both of us in concert to come into a company and really help the employee team and the management team really understand what's at stake and how to avoid catastrophe?
Yeah, and depending on the issue that's being trained on, I mean, if you're talking about general HR issues, it could be anywhere from hundreds to a few thousand dollars or so to develop policies, depending on the quantity of the policies, because not every business needs the same policies or needs the same depth of policies. It could be, a few hundred to thousands of dollars, too. I mean, the cost of not doing something is exponentially greater than doing something. So, it's more than just pay me now or pay me later. It's, keep your business now and keep food on the table for you and your employees or, you know, hit the unemployment, possibly hit the unemployment line, hit bankruptcy court.
Yeah, and again, let me reemphasize that. If you have one employee out of 200 that really goes sour and decides to really push this, the reality is that employee may win something, but the 199 employees left could end up with absolutely nothing because they're working for either a dramatically reduced company or a company that's bankrupt and going out of business.
Yeah, and then real briefly, you know, what you're doing is playing the odds. So if you really want to take it to the extreme, that one employee could go into the workforce and not just cause legal problems, but physical problems in terms of workplace violence, things like that, which is the more, that's the really extreme incidents that occur.
Really, so really in training in this case, of course, could be looked at as a kind of insurance.
Yeah, well, exactly, insurance for the business and your employees.
Right, right. It's like if this is, you're paying a premium. I mean, not talking about, you know, the premium, of course, yeah, the premium for insurance, in order to not have to pay a premium for a lawsuit, so to speak.
To an extent, yes.
Yeah, yeah, just kind of playing with words a little bit. But
I think, Tom, this goes back to, you know, to that email that we had. Whose side do we take? Do we take management side or do we take the employee side? And this is a case where you both should be on the same side.
Exactly.
Let's keep the company running in a healthy mode, and let's not be detracted or allow ourselves to be detracted by real or phony legal issues relative to that one in 200 employees.
Well, in my mind, a healthy company is going to be of one mind in terms of what's going to maximize our profits and productivity.
Right.
But we should take a break now, as it is time for such a thing. And this is Dr. Tom Rogers along with Jim Bellis and our special guest, Chuck Krugel. We'll be right back in just a moment, folks.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
All right, you 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Put your pad on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Still here.
Okay, that's right, your thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in.
But Daddy.
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy.
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy. Run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have straight-armed them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Bellis.
Well, welcome back. This is Jim Bellis, along with my co-host, Dr. Tom Rogers, and our guest today, Charles Krugel. And what we've been talking about is how to keep the legalities of your business from both an employer and employee standpoint in a very healthy and creative mode. Because when either side doesn't understand the liability that they both can withstand a lawsuit, it becomes very critical to keeping companies moving along in a fine and healthy manner for all the employees, not just the one or two disillusioned ones. And Chuck, as we go into this, before we go any further, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they go about doing that?
Sure, they could reach me via phone at 312-804-3851 or via my website at http://charlesakrugel.blogspot.com or just Google my name, Chuck Krugel, Charles Krugel, whatever. They could reach it through that.
Terrific. And Tom, if somebody wanted to get a hold of us, how would they go about doing that?
Okay, well, our website is www.drtomrogers.com. That's drtomrogers.com. Rogers, of course, is spelled R-O-G-E-R-S. No D in the last name. And our email addresses are tom@drtomrogers.com and jim@drtomrogers.com. Our phone number is area code 1-800-811-9222. That's 811-9222. And if you're not sure how to get a hold of Chuck, just send us an email or call us, and we'll connect you to him.
You know, and to get back into the program here, and it's not unusual for companies to ask Tom and I and to bring in somebody like Chuck to talk about the interviewing process along with the development and training of the employees and the management. And I'd like to bring this home again because I think the numbers that Chuck came up with, which is one of the reasons we've got him on our show today, keeping everybody attuned to the legalities of the employment market is a very expensive proposition.
Yeah.
It's expensive if you don't do the right things, and it's an investment if you do the right things. So, for example, I mean, if we're talking an employee payroll of $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, whatever the number is, for somewhere less than $10,000, you can come in and have everybody trained within your organization to at least be able to spot things that are starting to go awry before they get there. And you have the potential of saving yourself a $1 million lawsuit.
Yeah.
So when you look at it in those terms, you know, and Tom and I, and I'm sure Chuck does all the time, they say, look, training isn't in my budget, da, 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 da. I'm telling you, folks, if you go to Las Vegas and you're willing to roll the dice at the crap table on the validity of your company lasting for the next 4, 5, or 10 years, folks, you should not put any training in your budget. If, on the other hand, you want to keep your company running in a healthy mode and save yourself the outstanding cost that can happen, whether it, we're talking rather legalities, we're talking OSHA kind of things, we had a program on that a couple of months back, it's so much easier to invest a little up front, like the old Fram commercial, pay me now or pay me later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about here.
Yeah, and just to add real quickly, too, I mean, you can have the policies or something like a, you know, almost like a suggestion box or a open door policy, but if you're not actually telling people what that means, training them on what it's about and when to go to management or who to go to, you're still shooting yourself in the foot as a business person or a business owner.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people say, Chuck, just read a book and you'll understand what's happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tom and I have made a career of literally creating healthy organizations. And part of that is adult education. And one of the keys to adult education is to make sure that what people are hearing or reading, what it means to them as an individual. You don't read something about a lawsuit and think of it in terms of third party. You have to think about it in terms of what would happen if this were me? What would happen if this was my coworker creating this havoc in my company? It means all of those things. If you can't relate that to the individuals as well as the company, as well as the management, as well as the ownership, you're increasing the probability of bad things happening to you.
Well, yeah, and you're also hitting upon communication skills, and that's part of the problem resolution or dispute resolution process, especially at the rank and file level in the workplace. And that's why you also do the training, is to improve the communication skills of your employees so they know, you know, not just how to spot the problems, but how to communicate them, you know, so they're not blabbing it to everybody, you know, maybe they're using discretion, or they're not going outside the workplace to tell everybody about it.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think that's one of the reasons that it's helpful to bring in somebody from the outside. When they hear something like this from the owner, a lot of times we hear, well, he's just protecting his own butt, or he's only concerned about himself. He's really not concerned about us. And the opposite is generally true.
Yeah.
But it's the way it's communicated. And these kind of things are so touchy. That's the right word, Chuck. I don't know. But
well, they are. Yeah.
Use the word touchy. It's best to have them communicated by a real professional.
Well, these are sensitive issues. And I've done, you know, training where sexual harassment, any type of harassment or discrimination training, where you know you're standing in front of the workforce, talking to people, talking over the different shifts in the workplace, and you're talking about these issues, and all of a sudden after the training, people start walking up to me and asking me questions, and you know I include the management of the work of the company in. And they never heard a lot of these issues. They never knew some of this was going on. Right. And that's just right during the course of the training session itself.
Chuck, I understand we have a phone call coming into us from Illinois. Is that true?
Yes, it is true.
Can we bring that guest in?
Yeah. Bring him on.
His name's Bob.
Bob?
Hello?
Hello, Bob. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are
Bob,
you?
Bob, this is Jim, and Bob, you're on the phone here with Dr. Tom and Chuck Krugel. What's your question?
I was curious, Chuck, what would be some steps that an employer could take to protect themselves against some of the frivolous lawsuits that you talked about? How would an employer protect against those, and what things can he do to make sure that those things don't occur on a regular basis?
All right, yeah, we'll look at the preventive side. Well, I'll kind of discuss the preventive side and then also the reactive side. On the preventive side, you're talking about policies and practices in the workplace that basically allow for the communication and then the resolution of issues as they arise. You know, so employees are coming to you. You know, you're talking about maybe an open door policy, but then training your management and staff how to spot the issues, so that if people aren't utilizing such an open door, then maybe the staff and management are going to the employees. I mean, the management is going to the staff saying, "Hey, is everything cool?" You know, doing that on an intermittent and sincere basis, not like they're doing it on every Friday at 3 o'clock or something like that. That they're doing it, you know, every so often. If they see a disgruntled employee or somebody who's upset or somebody who's going through a difficult time, going up to them and reaching out to that employee in a sincere fashion. Now, when the issue itself arises, then or it becomes more formal, you do an investigation, you have processes or procedures for an investigation to then help resolve the issue, or if the issue can't be resolved, then to at least take the measures so that if it goes to a third party, such as a regulatory agency like the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or another attorney or judge or arbitrator, that basically you've taken steps to then minimize your exposure or liability that results from either an administrative complaint or a lawsuit. So that this way, and then if you win the lawsuit, it's possible to go, you know, in some states or jurisdictions, go after the employee for your attorney's fees, for your legal costs and expenses. So it does run, there is a continuum, and it all logically relates to one another. You know, you start off with the policies and practices, having them meaningful and people train them so they know what to do when issues arise. You follow those procedures into the resolution process itself, the investigatory or resolution process, take meaningful steps to resolve the issue, and then if it can't be resolved or if it's not sufficiently resolved even to the employee satisfaction, then at least your exposure and liability is minimal when it hits a third-party level.
Very good. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate it. I enjoy your show, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you for calling in. Do you have any other questions for Chuck as long as you have him on the line?
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Chuck, thank you for answering that question for Bob. You know, to get into this a little bit, one of the most frequent questions that we get asked when we go in there, and I don't know about you and when you go in, but employers always ask, what can I ask job applicants?
Yeah.
And by the same token, I think applicants ought to know what it's legal to be asked of them so that they don't get themselves into a bind answering questions that they need not to.
Yeah.
So let me ask that question to you. What can job applicants be asked and required to answer?
Well, basically, job applicants should not be asked anything that relates to the protected classes under our federal or state or local civil rights statutes. Basically, that relates to sex, national origin, race, religion, ethnicity, disability, military status, and then you could take it further into, or age, 40 years old or older, and then some states or municipalities have ordinances that relate to even social income, source of income, criminal convictions, and or questions regarding criminal convictions, source of income, and some of these statutes are more stringent too than the federal statutes. So you should not ask questions related to that. The questions that should be asked are related to the ability to perform the essential functions of the job. And essential functions is a legal term that is used in some of the laws.
Well, Chuck, I think it's time for another break. For those of you out there who would like to ask Chuck a question, we only have one segment left. So you might want to call in now. We have a couple lines open. In the meantime, we'll be back in just a few short minutes.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Bleeding profits, rupturing customer service, these business diseases can not only cripple a company, but kill it. On Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die with Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas, these symptoms of a sick business are exposed, diagnosed, and effective treatments and vaccinations are offered. Tune in to Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die, every Thursday at noon Pacific on Voice America Business to eliminate diseases contaminating your business and promote healthy, profitable growth.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas.
Hello, this is Dr. Tom Rogers, back for our final segment today of Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die, with our special guest, Chuck Krueger, who is a labor attorney, an expert in labor law, and informing us on what companies can and cannot do. And Chuck was answering questions regarded, like, what can be asked on job applications, or I assume, you know, in interviews per se.
Mm-hmm.
What can be asked, what can't be asked, between the two are synonymous.
Yeah.
And you were in the midst of your answer, so why don't you, you know, just get right back to it?
Yeah, what I was indicating about the essential functions of the job, asking questions that relate to that. I mean, you, as a business, then you do have to determine what the essential job functions are. And there is a process related to doing that. Sometimes it's simple or more common, a common sense type of process. But depending on the nature of the business, the nature of the job, it could be a more complicated process. And you do want to then maybe have somebody like yourselves doing a job evaluation and validation process so you have relevant, you know, valid job descriptions so that you can insulate yourself from complaints or suits should they arise over the hiring process or the interviewing process.
Right, because depending on what the job evaluation, job analysis calls for,
that
determines the nature of the interview questions, which under certain circumstances could be illegal or legal. Is that nuanced according to the law?
Yeah, I mean, the simple way to put it is that you don't want anything in the job description that not only doesn't relate to the job itself, but if it doesn't relate to the job and then also tends to exclude certain classes, the protected classes, you know, gender, race, age, disability, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, simple, some of the more obvious ones are like weight restrictions or we need a female or somebody who only speaks a certain language if it's not actually required.
Well, what about your ethnicity thing with the disabled? Can we ask if they're physically able to do a job?
No, you can only ask if they're able to perform the essential functions of the job and you can ask that with or without an accommodation. So you can't ask if they're necessarily they're physically able to do the job. You can ask if they basically if they can perform the essential functions with or without accommodation. And the accommodation part itself is, you know, you get into a whole other analysis there. So because the same thing comes also can arise with, are you psychologically, you know, or emotionally or mentally able to do the job? So
yeah, I remember I was working when the what was it, the Disability Act? That was around 1993, the, you know, Federal Disability Act?
90.
Okay, yeah. 1990. And that changed a lot of things for companies. I remember that well, with the consulting company I was working with at the time that was very much specialized in hiring. That was a good time. And has hopefully helped a lot of people, handicapped people, get jobs. So.
Yeah, actually it was 91, I believe, but
now
that I think about it.
You know, to check, a thought just struck me. We've been talking about employees suing the employer.
Yeah.
But can the employer sue employees?
Well, it's not for defamation, things like that, maybe, but it's not. I would not say it's a cost-feasible process to go through. I mean, because basically what you're looking for, I mean, as a preventive means of preventing these, preventing lawsuits or preventing defamation or slander from proliferating, maybe, but it's not the most cost-effective means of doing that.
So in your estimation, all of the labor laws that exist, do they tend to favor the employer or the employee?
No, I would say it's down the middle. Yeah, I can't say quantitatively where the balance of power lies. To me, it appears to be down the middle, but that's not based on any empirical evidence, empirical research.
Well, Chuck, if you run into a situation, let's say someone thinks they're unfairly fired, let's look at it from the standpoint of the employee. Now, are most attorneys willing just to take that up based on getting a percentage without, you know, getting a percentage of a settlement, or do they want to get paid something that they know they can count on?
Well, I think you want to get paid on something you know you could count on. Otherwise, you're just being like a shakedown artist as an attorney. If you lose the suit, you could be liable for the employer's legal fees. I mean, the employee could be. So, I mean, there is checks and balances within the system that make it prohibitive for just any attorney to look, you know, basically be running around the streets looking for any disgruntled employee.
Well, with one quarter of with one quarter of companies with employees where this that statistics that you that where there are lawsuits, many attorneys must be taking on contingency.
Well, maybe I don't know about the statistics relative to how the fees, you know, how fees are structured, whether it's contingency or hourly, but in relation to those suits. But there's a lot of nuances involved with lawsuits and litigation. It's a very long and exhausting process. The attorneys do pretty well in the process. Lawsuits are the last resort for dispute resolution in the workplace, and they should be. It's a difficult and long process. You have to have a lot of, quote-unquote, intestinal fortitude to go through the process as a party, as a litigant. So, and the process is geared toward determining fact from fiction and figuring out who's legally liable for what.
So to net this whole thing out, as I understand it, Chuck,
yeah,
you're better off avoiding any sort of hint of a lawsuit on the horizon.
Yeah.
And nip it in the bud very early, and even better off, preventing it from having a bud even form.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say in almost every instance, you're better off that way. It's always better to prevent it. I mean, as an employer anyway, I mean, you want to be able to have some measure of control of your workplace, including the workforce, and you want it to be meaningful so that, productivity and profits are maximized. Well, it's going to be nearly impossible to do if every issue is escaping your attention, if every issue is going outside of your workplace to an attorney or a third party.
And I think, Chuck, and again, I don't think we can emphasize this enough. If you're one of the 199 out of 200 employees who are really dependent on this business from continuing on in a profitable mode in your source of income,
yeah,
it's to your benefit as much as it is to management or ownership's benefit is to help avoid these kind of issues, because in the end, the only possible winner is the one suer. Right, and they might get nothing more than some self-satisfaction out of it. But
yeah,
in the meantime, there's been legal fees on both sides. There's been a disruption to business as usual. People have taken their mind off of how to create and maintain the healthy organization. Profitability goes down the tube. It seems to me that both when I was in the corporate world and when I was in my own, I had my own manufacturing company, I probably spent more money on training and development of people in all areas of the business just to make sure my business continued on. And I was able to focus, in this particular case, 200 employees, all focused on the same results, which was a place to put food on our table for everybody.
Yeah, and if you look at that $304,000 cost to settle a suit when no training occurs, and you relate that back to Dr. Tom's question a few minutes ago about who makes out in these cases, the attorneys are, the attorney's taken home about a third of that if it's a contingency-related fee, and then the employee still has to pay costs, other legal expenses or costs, and they still have to go through the litigation process, whether it's 1 year to settle or 2-3 years, whatever, to get to the point of settlement. So they're not always making out great in that. I mean, there's a lot of emotional investment in that, too, for the litigants. And basically, then, you want to not just have your employees, those 199 employees, so to speak, working out. You want to have them working out for you, but you want to have them working out for you the right way.
Right.
You don't want 199 stormtroopers running around ratting on everyone.
Yeah.
You want.
Jack, we're coming to the end of the program. I'd certainly like to thank you again for appearing with us and disseminating so much helpful information to everybody. And Tom, can you tell us a little bit about next week's program?
Absolutely. Next week, Jim and I are going to be out working with clients out of town, so we are going to have a show that we had on a little while back, and it's called Systematizing Employee Performance Excellence. We had an excellent response to this show. Thought it'd be a good thing to put back on. Now, the guest is Mary Cameron Gerlitz. She's the former Vice President of Human Resources at CDW Computers, and when she started there was 13 employees, and when she left, they were doing well, $1 billion in sales. So it was a phenomenal growth, and she really is an expert at the kind of systems that you need to put together, performance management systems, to have continually high performance, what it takes to build in terms of performance management, the kind of things that need to be in there. So that was last week, or that's next week, I should say. And it is time for us to close out now. This is Dr. Tom Rogers along with Jim Bellis. Now, if you want to get a hold of us, our phone number is 847-562-9766, And our email address is tom@drtomrogers.com or jim@drtomrogers.com. So we're signing off now. We will be back same time, same place. Well, actually 2 weeks from today, we'll be back same time, same place. Our rebroadcast will be happening next week, 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, or sometime in between for those of you living somewhere in the middle of America. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
We thank you for joining us today. Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas will be back again next week at the same time with more business diseases. Cure them or die, right here on Voice America Business.